There, this is the Romance Program. I'm Volunteer Jeannie Ost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour I hope you will enjoy. It's from True Love Magazine called AA Ruined My Marriage. Here's the story. My name is Stacy Skidmore. I'm 27 years old and I have two children, ages 5 and 3. My husband, Tony, has not had a drink in almost 8 months. If you knew the way Tony used to drink, you would guess that I must be the happiest woman in the world now. Last year, I would have thought so too. So why am I sitting here alone on a Saturday night with the kids in bed and just the TV for company? Why am I so upset? Because in a few hours, Tony will be home. He will be sober, and there won't be any quarrels that wake the kids up. He'll say, "Hi, Stace," and I'll say, "Hi," and we will go to bed like strangers. Saturday nights were never lonely when I first met Tony. I'd just turned 21, and some of the girls from the insurance company I worked for had insisted on taking me out for a drink after work. We went to The Shadow, a bar I'd heard about. It had a bit of a rep as a pickup place, but a lot of young people went there. It was a Friday night, and the place was crowded as the five of us walked in and found a table. We ordered, and Christy, a cute coworker of mine, said, "Let's do guy check, gals. Wow, at the bar is a really cute one looking right at birthday girl. Lucky night, Stace." Actually, I was really sort of shy, and this sort of thing embarrassed me. I didn't have the cute, playful, kidding way that some of the girls like Christy had, and so I didn't glance right away toward the bar. Finally, though, as the other girls were looking around and giggling, I was really curious, so I glanced timidly toward the bar. Well, from the first, there wasn't any doubt. My eyes met his, and even when I looked down, I felt a sudden magic pull to look up, and then I found I could hardly look away, and I just knew he was feeling the same way. Cute, that was hardly the word. The fellow looking back at me seemed to radiate charm. He held a beer in one hand, and when another guy came over to say a few words to him, he seemed to answer, and yet at the same time not to take his eyes off of me. "Hey, look at birthday girl," Christy laughed as she noted what was going on. "Some hunk, isn't he? I'll bet you'll be asked to dance soon." Feeling awkward, I turned and tried to give my attention to the other girls and their chatter, but like warm air currents, I could still feel his gaze, and yet I felt too shy to keep peeking at him. Quickly, though, I looked back at him. He wasn't there. I felt something almost like panic. Then I saw him coming from the small dance floor toward our table. Panic again. I wondered if he'd been dancing. He looked down at me and smiled. I just asked the band to do a slow number. I'm not much of a fast dancer. Would you dance with me? Would I dance with him? Would I want a drink of water on a hot day? I got up from the table. He just stood there holding my hand and looking at me, our hands together. I'd never felt anything so right in my life. Moments passed, and then in his deep voice he said, "I almost forgot I asked you to dance." We danced, and his arms felt like no arms had ever felt before around me. He was warmth and comfort. I could feel my heart beating, and maybe his, too. "Do you have to sit with your girlfriends, or could we get a table and talk? Remember, I only dance the slow numbers." He paused. "I think I want to dance every slow dance with you for the rest of my life." And that was how I met Tony Skidmore and spent the first night of my 21st year. We talked and danced every slow dance, and then he took my phone number. I went home in a zombie-like state with my girlfriends. I dated quite often and had even had a steady boyfriend for almost a year until he'd moved away. I'd liked some of the dates, but never had I felt the sexual arousal I'd felt just at Tony's merest touch. Love? Was this the way it happened? And he was nice, too. He had a cute sense of humor and made me laugh. Looking back, I don't think I was even aware of the amount of beer he drank that night. He certainly didn't seem drunk, just fun and caring and, well, adorable. And then he called the next day, and there was even magic in the voice over the phone. He said he was busy that Saturday night, and I hoped it wasn't with a date. Then he asked me to a movie on Sunday, and of course I said I'd go. He asked me if I liked early movies, and I said that was fine. So he picked me up at 2. When he came to the door dressed in slacks, I thought again of how really good-looking he was. I shared an apartment with another girl, Maria, but she wasn't home at the time to drool. I sort of wished she had been. Tony took my arm as we walked to his car. He told me that he worked for a well-known construction company as a carpenter, so I knew he made good money. As if he'd read my thoughts, Tony leaned forward and touched my cheek. As he did, I thought I detected a slight whiff of beer. Well, lots of guys have a beer with lunch. Lunch on Sundays, I thought. We drove toward town and the movie complex, and once while driving, Tony reached over and took my hand and squeezed it softly. He turned and looked at me, and then suddenly he pulled the car over and turned onto a side street. Almost the instant he stopped the car, I was in his arms, and he was kissing me over and over again. Just then, Tony stopped and sat back. His breathing was rough and deep. "Do you really want to go to a movie, Stacy?" he asked. I didn't, but I was afraid. This was all too fast for me. Maybe we should, I replied. This is all so... Yeah, I know. Wow. Okay, then, let's go. We have lots of time. But maybe we can stop somewhere and have a drink first, okay? Tony suggested, smiling. I knew he was as flustered as I was, and I said that was fine. We stopped at a quiet little bar. I only wanted a Coke, but Tony ordered a bourbon, and I remember him telling the waiter to make it a double. At that time, I didn't really pay any attention to this, as I was still fluttery, from our session in the car. As I looked at him across the table, I noticed the light-colored hairs coming out from his open shirt collar. Within a short time, it seemed that the fluster had left him, and he was smiling at me again with tenderness and confidence. He reached across the table and took my hand and brought it up to his lips. Slowly and softly, he began kissing each of my fingers and my open palm. I felt myself go limp. And when I looked in his eyes, I saw open desire. I wanted to say yes, but instead I only smiled and asked if maybe we should remember the movie. Tony looked at me and with a wonderful grin said, "Movie? What movie? I thought we were in one. That's how wonderful this is to me." Somehow I knew he wanted another drink. But instead, we left the bar and went to the movie. It was something funny, and I loved Tony's hearty laugh. After the movie, Tony asked me if I wanted a drink. I said no, but that I would like a hamburger or a salad, as I was a little hungry. We drove to another little bar that Tony knew, and he said they had great burgers. Again, I watched Tony drink 2 drinks while I had my Coke, burger, and salad. I remember thinking that he'd had a lot to drink and that if he were one of my uncles, he'd be acting silly and half drunk. Tony never seemed to act any differently, though, except he seemed to talk and joke more, but always in his quiet way. manner. We drove home, and Tony drove carefully and slowly, as if he knew he'd had a lot to drink. I felt very safe with him, despite the drinking. I was mainly wondering what would happen when we said goodnight. Or would we say goodnight? I hadn't told him that my roommate wasn't home that night and wouldn't be back until Monday evening. Should I? Was it too soon? I knew very well what would happen if he came inside. Tony made it easy for me. He kissed me gently several times, then walked me to the door. I have to work early tomorrow, Stace. I think I'd better say goodnight. I don't dare be late. Why did I think he meant late again? He told me that he'd call me Monday night and kiss me again and left. Did I think he weaved just a little as he walked back to his car? Why had he seemed so urgent when we first kissed and so in control now? I had a heart full of questions, as well as a heart full of growing love and longing. I really didn't know Tony, and yet somehow I felt that I knew him better than anyone in the world. It had been late spring when I'd first met Tony, and by June we were a couple. Tony called me every day that we didn't see each other, and often sent me flowers. Sometimes he came to my apartment and we just lounged around and got to know each other. Then one Friday night, Tony was late. When he finally arrived, he had a six-pack of beer with him to share with you ladies. Well, it was obvious this was not his first beer, and this was not the first time he'd brought beer to the apartment, even though he was usually the one who drank four to our one each. That evening, though, his speech was sort of slurred. Hours later, after he'd left, Maria said, "Stacy, that's a real sweet guy, and I know you like him. He's cute and fun. Just be careful, honey. That guy really likes his drinks, maybe more than he likes you or anyone." Maria's words were words I did not want to hear, even though they'd been in my own thoughts more and more. Despite our strong feelings for each other, Tony and I had still not made love. I knew it was quite simply because he'd had too much to drink again. Come to think of it, how many times had I been with Tony when he was totally sober? Not many, I realized. And even when he was, he always seemed sort of shy and tense. I also thought about all the money he spent on beer and when he was in a bar. He definitely always treated others. Oh, I had so many thoughts and questions as my relationship with Tony grew. After all, I knew something about alcoholism. How could I not when it was on TV, radio, and in lots of magazines all the time? I knew that one of the men I worked with had gone to some treatment center, and word was that he attended AA meetings now. Well, he was a nice guy, but he must have been over 50 years old. Tony, on the other hand, was young, handsome, and loads of fun. He couldn't be an alcoholic, whatever that was. I still pictured old men on Skid Row with wine bottles, even though that picture wasn't at all like the well-dressed man at work who was always so pleasant to everyone and had a good-paying job and a wife and kids. One Sunday, Tony asked if I would like to go to a favorite lake of his with him for a picnic. We would take a radio and just lounge around. For some reason, I asked him if we could go without any beer. It makes you sleepy, honey, and I want you wide awake all day. I smiled at him in what I hoped was a sexy way when I said this. At first, Tony looked sort of funny, and then he said, "Yeah, sure, Stace. It'll do me good to..." His words dwindled off, and then he started to say, "My boss at work would sure..." And he didn't finish that sentence either. Nevertheless, we had a wonderful day at the beach. Oh, we were a little quiet at first, and then we began to fool around like kids. We splashed water at each other. Exhausted, we finally fell to the blanket and ate our picnic lunch. The radio was playing, and after we were done, Tony told me what a great meal it had been. "That chicken was the best I've ever had, I think," he said. "You're great, Stacy. Do I tell you that enough?" He reached over then and gently took my hand, and then I was in his arms and he was kissing me. I felt my body responding to his with equal fervor. I just knew his hands belonged. Then I felt him moving and moving, and I think I helped him remove my bikini. There on that beach, on that blanket, we finally made the sort of love we'd been so ready to make for so long. On the way home, we were both quiet and smiling. Every time Tony looked at me, he was smiling. And that night, instead of going directly home, we stopped at Tony's small apartment. We made love again, and as we lay there contentedly afterward, Tony leaned over me on his elbow and looked down at me intently. "I love you, Stacy. I really do. Will you marry me? I need you, Stacy. I need you so much." Looking back, I remember saying, "Yes, Tony, I'll marry you." I also remember that even in the dim light from the street, I noticed the empty beer cans on the counter, and that I had thought that, yes, he does need me. I love him, and I can help him. Still, I was very, very happy. We started planning a small wedding almost immediately. Tony and I both had similar backgrounds. Our parents had both been divorced, and Tony's father had died. His mother lived in California with her new husband. They were not close. He also had a brother in the service whom he hadn't heard from in 2 years. My mom and dad had each remarried. My dad lived in Nova Scotia, and my mom moved with her new husband back and forth between a home in Mississauga and a winter place in Florida. She called now and then, and I knew she would be happy that I would be married. Anyway, it made our wedding plans simple. Maria would stand up for me, and Gary, one of Tony's co-workers, would be his best man. We contacted a minister, a few friends, and on a beautiful day in early fall, we were married. After the ceremony, we went to a nice restaurant with Maria and Gary and our other guests. Everyone toasted us, and I was so happy when Tony only sipped at the champagne and gazed adoringly at me. It was so cute the way he kept saying, "my wife," as if he loved the very words. Even Maria looked happy for me, although I knew she had her doubts and was concerned about Tony's drinking. Oh, it was such a happy day, and I loved Tony with all my heart, and I knew that he loved me in the same way. Life was going to be wonderful for us. I guess you're probably thinking that I probably wouldn't feel this way too long. Well, that wasn't the way it was for the first few years of our marriage. In fact, sometimes I think that at that time, our love just kept getting better and better. We found a cute little house with 2 bedrooms in a nice little subdivision. We were renting and hoped to buy. We were lucky, in fact, as it was partially furnished. I didn't have much in the way of savings, and Tony had none. But we were both young and had jobs, and I just knew we would someday own our own home and have lovely new furniture. For the time being, though, our life together was great, and our love for each other reached even higher levels of passion. Oh, there had been some incidents of drinking, some instances that I wasn't able to ignore, even though Tony was so sorry and lovable afterward. There were times when I knew there wasn't much left of his paycheck after he'd stopped for a few with his buddies after work. There was even a time when we went out for an evening with Maria and her new boyfriend, and Tony got so drunk that we had to help him from the bar. "I want all our work done early," he would say. "That way we have more time together." And laughing, he would pull me back into our bedroom where time flew by in waves of pleasure. We were still in our rented house, and Tony was still driving his old beater. There were not any prospects for a down payment on a house. I think things really started to change when I found out I was pregnant. We'd often talked about the children we would have. That's why I was so surprised when I first told Tony I'd made us a special dinner that night. "I have wonderful news, Tony." I can still see the look on his face, even to this day. I'd expected pure pleasure from him, and instead I saw a look I can only describe as fear. I was stunned. We were both silent for what seemed like minutes. Then Tony got up and took me in his arms and kissed me over and over again. It was nice, but I felt, well, somehow, I felt it was an act. "We'll still have time for us too, right?" Tony asked, and then laughed. "Of course we will. Our own baby. He can go everywhere with us." It seemed to me then that what Tony was really asking was if there would still be time for him. I told myself this was nonsense, just the goofy thoughts of a pregnant woman, that's all. That night we held each other closely, and when we made love, Tony seemed to be almost shy with me, but oh, so tender. I loved him so much. The next night he didn't come home until almost 3 o'clock in the morning and called in sick, and I called in sick for him the next day. When I left for work that morning, he was still sleeping. I saw an empty beer can lying there. "I'll just leave it there," I thought. "Then he'll see." See what? I wondered. Throughout my pregnancy, these things happened frequently. As time went by, I was getting more and more tired from the strain, and finally my doctor asked me if anything was wrong. I told him no, but I don't think he believed me. Of course, Tony was still wonderful. I guess I thought that men who drank too much were abusive and cursed all the time. Quite the contrary, Tony only seemed to become sweeter when he was drinking. Oh, I talked to him about his drinking several times. Each time he'd admit he'd had too much to drink, and each time he'd promise me that it wouldn't happen again. Each time I believed him. I was about a month from my due date when I left work early for a doctor's appointment one afternoon. When I stopped at the house, first I saw Tony's old car sitting in the driveway. I went in, and in the kitchen, Tony and a guy from work, Bill, were sitting drinking beer at the kitchen table. By their talk, I could tell those weren't their first beers, and the cans on the counter proved it. When he saw me, Tony's mouth dropped open. Bill looked up and grinned. I had never liked him much. "Now you're gonna get it, Tony. Ain't that right, little mama? A guy just can't go losing jobs now, can he?" I looked at Tony. He lowered his eyes and then mumbled, "Yeah, I got fired today. I guess I had too much to drink to be at work, and I made a big mistake on the door frame. Anyway, Stace, honey, I'm sorry, but I'll get something else. It'll never happen again." "Don't be too hard on the guy, Miss Stacy," Bill said in a slurred voice. Hell, he can get unemployment just like me. There's a lot of us guys that hang out at Lucky's Bar that can help him pick up odds and ends of work. Hey, look at me, I'm doing okay." "I'd like you to leave, Bill." I was surprised by how firm my voice sounded. "Tony and I need to be alone." Muttering to himself, Bill got up from the table and weaved his way toward the door. After he'd left, I turned to Tony. I wanted to go to him and hold him. Instead, I picked up a beer can and said, "Here's the reason why you lost your job, Tony. Now what are you going to do about it?" When Tony looked up at me, I saw the tears in his eyes. "Honey, I'm never going to drink again. I'm a good carpenter, you'll see. I'll have another job soon, and probably one with more money, too. Oh, Stacy, honey, you'll see. Oh, please, Stace, don't look at me like that." He reached out his hand to me then, and just like the first time on the dance floor, I took it. As he pulled me toward him, all I knew was that I loved him. We stayed in that evening, talking. After a shower and something to eat, Tony felt better, and that night in bed we were wonderfully close as our first time on the beach. I felt his love and his need and the trembling fervor of our union again. I knew then that Tony's drinking would come to an end and that our life together would continue to be wonderful. In the weeks that followed, Tony did not break his promise to me. Within a few days, he did have another job. In the mornings, he woke early to leave for work in the mornings and was always home shortly after he'd left there in the evenings. And if he worked overtime, he always called ahead so I wouldn't worry. He was often very quiet in those days, but I figured this was only natural. What would the baby do any day? And a new job to occupy his mind. The night our Alexandra was born was wonderful. I went into labor shortly after Tony came home from his job. I'd taken a month's leave of absence from work, and I had everything in readiness for the birth of our precious firstborn. Tony took my suitcase out to the car and carefully helped me in. As we drove to the hospital, he kept reaching over and touching me. He was with me in the delivery room, and when Alexander was delivered, I saw a shiver of emotion pass over his handsome, gentle face. As he held her for the very first time, I saw him weep, and I heard him whisper to our little girl, "I'll be a good daddy, precious angel. Honest, I will." Happiness continued for a few short weeks after Alexander came home with us. I was so happy that Tony didn't go out drinking with his buddies, even though I knew a few had called to get him to come out and celebrate Dad. Evenings when he came home from work, he brought wonderfully silly gifts for Alexandra. The card he gave me, with "Best Mommy in the World" on it, was signed from Alexandra and that other fellow. I was so busy and happy with Alexandra then that I really didn't notice how quiet Tony was and how he rarely held his little girl, even though he blew kisses at her and smiled tenderly each time he looked at her. Then one week, Alexandra developed a slight ear infection. The doctor had seen her, and we were both resting. Tony came home from work in a joyous mood, telling me that he'd gotten a raise. His face was shining, and he said for me to rest, as he was going to fix me a Chef Tony gourmet meal. Something about his playfulness reminded me for a second of his drinking. I didn't smell any beer on him, though, and I felt ashamed by the thought. That evening, after a dinner that I praised highly, Tony held Alexandra and sang songs from our generation to her, wondering what kind of music we would have to listen to when she grew up. He was the charming Tony I remembered then, full of life and love. What a wonderful daddy Alexandra has, I thought. That night, Tony thoughtfully said that he'd sleep on the couch so I could rest better after the sleepless night I'd recently gone through with Alexandra. I told him it was a nice gesture, but I also knew that I'd miss his warm body next to mine. Still, these evenings continued. One afternoon, Alexandra was napping and I was doing a casual pickup of the things scattered around our living room. Something caught my eye and I picked up around the floor near the sofa. I reached for it and pulled out a bottle of vodka. Shock and realization went through me, and then fear. Tony had been drinking all along, and that was why he seldom kissed me and slept on the couch lately. That was why his brief kisses smelled heavily of mouthwash and something else. I'd felt numb all over. Secret drinking. Tony couldn't be an alcoholic, but that was what I'd heard they did. Still, he hadn't missed work, and he'd been sweet and adorable ever since Alexandra was born. So maybe he was just adjusting to our new baby. But the empty bottle told another story. How many other bottles had there been? I started to head to the garbage can, but then I remembered that it was garbage day and it had been picked up already. I didn't know what else to do. That night, Tony came home serious and quiet again. He had a bright balloon for Alexandra. He looked a little pale, or was it my imagination? I said nothing. Tony slept in our bed again that night. I snuggled up close and ran my hands over his body. I felt the tension I knew was there go away. He held me and kissed me. Oh, Stacy, I need you so. Our lovemaking that night was hard, swift, and passionate. He needs me, I murmured to myself. I'll take care of him. It's hard to describe the next few years of our life. When Alexandra was 2, I was pregnant again. Both Alexandra and Mikey were healthy, active children. My job had health benefits, and during the times when Tony was unemployed, we were able to live on my salary. A few people at work had heard of Tony's drinking, and I knew I was regarded as a brave, courageous woman. Once when I entered the bathroom at work, I heard a coworker say, "Oh, she really only has 2 children, but her husband counts as 3. I guessed by the looks on their faces they were talking about me. Tony was not drunk all the time. In fact, he seldom acted drunk. "I would never be unfaithful to you, Stacy," he said. Somehow I knew it was true. Nevertheless, our own sex life, once so beautiful, had dwindled to almost nothing. I was so busy with the children, my job, and Tony seemed uninterested. One evening, Tony was home and watching a ball game. I looked at his still handsome face and rugged body and felt something go through me. The kids were asleep, and I went and sat beside him. After a while, he turned toward me and began to kiss me. We went into the bedroom then, and I felt desire building. Then I felt him rise and stand up. "I'm sorry, Stacy," was all he said, leaving the room. I felt hot tears come to my eyes, but caught myself quickly. "You have too much to do to take care of things," I told myself. "You're not a kid anymore. Get back to doing the laundry. That's what weekends are for." But for an instant, I remembered long ago weekends of cuddling under the covers, shared showers, and meals interrupted because we'd looked into each other's eyes a second too long and raced to the bedroom. Sadly, though, our years together had become more and more little more than a never-ending series of problems. There were, of course, Tony's problems, but I took them as my own and protected him as much as I possibly could. Then it happened, and I knew suddenly that I could not help Tony any longer. I was just about to go to bed one evening when the phone rang. It was the police. Tony had been stopped for drunk driving, and they were holding him in jail. He was too drunk to talk to me, but would I come down to the station in the morning? I arranged for my neighbor to watch the kids. When I got to the jail, Tony was waiting. They said he could go, but there would be a court date and a sentencing and a fine. I'd never seen Tony look like this before. His hair was a mess and his shirt looked as if he'd picked it out from a dumpster. He smelled of stale alcohol, and his eyes would not meet mine. I don't know what to say to him, frankly, or I didn't know. I wished they could have kept him and cleaned him up. We walked to the car. Tony, do you want people to see you like this? After the words were out, I wondered why I hadn't asked him where he was going or insisted that he come home with me. Tony just turned and looked at me. I need to be alone for a while, Stacy. Don't worry. Well, don't go to any bars. You're a mess enough for the kids to see now. Then I got into the car and drove home. A lot of heads turned when I came in, but no one said anything to me. Mr. Slayton, the man who was rumored to be an alcoholic, nodded and looked as if he wanted to say something to me, but he remained at his desk. The day passed slowly. That night I got the kids from daycare and went home. I wondered if Tony would be there. The lively chatter of Alexandra and Mikey helped me through dinner. By that point, they were never surprised if Daddy wasn't at home, and accepting and loving if he was. Tony could be wonderful with the kids and me. Oh, how I miss the Tony of our early days. Did I still love him? I knew I did, but there was too much fear mingled with it. Just then the doorbell rang. I went to the door and saw Bill, Tony's old drinking buddy, the one I'd never liked. I was about to shut the door on him when something in Bill's eyes caught me. I also noticed how neat and clean he looked for a change. Stacy, he said, I know you don't feel much like talking now, and probably least of all with me, but it's about Tony, and I hope you'll listen. Listen? Why would I listen to you, Bill? You're probably the one who took him out drinking last night. I don't blame you for thinking that, Stacy. That's not what happened, though. Tony did come to see me a couple weeks ago, though. I know this won't make sense to you right now, but you see, I've been sober for quite a while now, Stacy. That's when Tony came to see what he came to see me about. You see, he wants to know how I do it. He came to see me today, and he's at my place right now. He's ashamed to come home, so he's going to stay with me for a few days, and I'm going to take him to some AA meetings. I didn't know what to say. Bill looked so sincere and spoke so softly. But AA meetings? I'm glad he's okay and sober, Bill, and thank you for stopping by, but Tony is not an alcoholic. He just has to learn not to drink so much. I mean, sometimes he doesn't drink for weeks at a time. Maybe he just needs some counseling. A kind look was on Bill's face. Stacy, I didn't say that Tony was an alcoholic. I am, but maybe Tony isn't. All I know is that he wants to stop drinking, and he thinks he might be an alcoholic. After he goes to a few meetings, he can make up his own mind about it. I started to say, but all of those weird people at those meetings, and then thought of Mr. Slayton at work. So all I said was, thanks for coming, Bill. I'll know where Tony is now. Just tell him to call me when he's ready. I almost said, and tell him I love him, but something in my heart stopped me. I watched Bill walk down the driveway. Who was that, Mommy? I found myself saying, oh, just an old friend of your daddy's. Daddy is visiting him for a few days, but he says to tell you that he loves you and misses you. And when I said that, I knew that Bill had been sincere in his visit and was even a little glad that Tony was with him. At least I'd have some quiet time to think and plan and decide what was best for Tony. Tony and I talked on the phone a few times while he stayed at Bill's. He asked about the kids and wanted to know if we needed anything. He said he had a court date soon. He said that some guys in AA were helping him. I asked if they would really help him out of the trouble he was in, and he sort of chuckled. It was almost a month before Tony finally came home to stay. We were a little awkward with each other at first, but the kids were all over their daddy right away. We had a nice dinner that evening. Then about 7:30, he put on a fresh shirt, brushed his hair, and said that a friend was picking him up for an AA meeting. "Oh, your first night home?" I asked. He looked at me a little funny. "I want to go, Stacy. These meetings are good for me." "Tony, I can help you, and you know I will. You don't need those meetings." He smiled and said, "Yes, I do, Stace." "Well, is Bill picking you up then?" "No, it's Bobby, but I'll see Bill there." "Well, I'll see you in a couple hours," he said, and gave me a quick peck on the cheek and was gone. That was the pattern of our lives, sort of followed in the next, few weeks. Almost every evening after dinner, Tony would leave for an AA meeting. He was usually home within a couple hours, but sometimes it was later. Tony said that sometimes the members of AA went out for coffee together afterwards. When he was home, Tony was helpful and pleasant. I did notice, however, that he didn't seem to depend on me as much when it came as he had before. We were making love again, and it was nice, but it seemed to lack the intensity it had always held for us before. The phone rang often for Tony, and it was usually a new friend he'd made in AA, and I would often hear him laughing, a full, genuine laugh. Tony was willing to talk about his meetings with me, but after a few times I found some of the talk strange and didn't want to hear any more. Tony talked about acceptance of a higher power, and once I laughed and said, "Well, you and Bill and that gang might just be getting religion after all, so when do you open your church?" Tony looked at me and didn't reply, and we didn't say much about his meetings after that. He was staying sober, but I knew I could have helped him do that myself. I just had not been firm enough. Still, I knew I could take care of his problem now, and I didn't understand why he needed other people to help him when he had the kids and me. Then something happened that made me begin to think there were other reasons for Tony to be going to so many AA meetings. I'd often heard him mention Bobby, and I figured he was a buddy of Bill's. Then one day I came home from work early. The phone rang, and it was a woman asking for Tony. I told her he wasn't home yet and asked who was calling. She said her name was Bobby and asked if I'd have him call her. She said that Tony knew her number. Suddenly I remembered a note I'd found in Tony's jeans pocket when I was doing the wash a week or so before. It had read, "Bobby, noon at Pegasus." The Pegasus was a cute little restaurant downtown, and as I remembered it, it was quiet, dark, and intimate. A coldness came over me as I told Bobby on the phone, "This is Tony's wife. I'll see he gets your message," and curtly hung up. That night, when Tony came home, I gave him Bobby's message in a cool tone of voice. I saw his face brighten when he heard her name, and then he turned to walk to the phone. I heard myself ask in a stern voice, "Just who is Bobby, Tony?" He smiled. "She's a good AA friend of mine." Suddenly, I had a realization. AA had women in it, and some of them would be cute, single, and willing to be nice to a cute guy like Tony. Suddenly, I really began to dislike those meetings. I heard Tony talking and laughing on the phone with that Bobby woman, and I felt my anger grow. I'd see that he stopped going. I'd find a way. I would help him stay sober. It couldn't be that hard. Maybe he could look into counseling. I didn't bring up the subject of meetings at dinner that night, as Tony was being so cute with Alexandra and Mikey, and I couldn't help notice how healthy and handsome he looked. Then after dinner, Alexandra and Mikey were playing in their bedroom, and I saw Tony come out of the bathroom combing his hair. "Are you going out?" I asked him. "Yeah, Bill's picking me up for an 8 o'clock meeting." "Meetings," I said with a derisive snort. "Must be nice with all those people sitting around at Pegasus." Tony looked at me funny. "Meetings are important to me, Stace. Our group likes Pegasus because it's quiet and a guy in the program works there and keeps our coffee cups filled. It's sort of an unofficial meeting place during the day, but not at night when it's busy." "Look, Tony," I said, "I know you don't want to drink. Maybe Bill could come over here some night and you guys could talk in the kitchen. You wouldn't have to go to meetings then, and there's nothing here to drink. Sometimes I think those meetings are just an excuse for you to stay away from this house." "Honey," Tony looked dismayed, "meetings are so when I am home. I'm sober and able to be a good husband and father to you and the kids. I'm still new in the program, Stacy. I need to be with other alcoholics who understand what I'm going through." "So go, then, and let Bobby understand you all over the place." Just then, a car horn blew. Tony gave me a quick kiss and was gone. Gone to see understanding Bobby, most likely. Several weeks went by. I grew more and more resentful of Tony's meetings and phone calls. I wondered what Bobby looked like. Nights when Tony didn't turn to me in bed were nights I was sure he was with her. Once I almost grabbed Bill and was going to confront him about what went on in those AA meetings and ask him about Bobby. Once I found myself staring at Mr. Slayton at work, I wondered what his family life was like. He had pictures on his desk of his wife and grown children, but who was he really at home? Things got more and more strained in our home. Tony was sober and playful with the kids, but he hardly mentioned his meetings anymore. Almost every night he went out and came home quietly several hours later. My sarcastic remarks certainly didn't help. Our lovemaking stopped, and we lay in bed together, but very apart. I knew things were going well at work for Tony, and he continued to look better and better and talk less and less. Finally, it came down to an explosion. Tony had gone to a meeting one evening and was a little later than usual in coming home. When a car finally pulled up outside, I sat out front for a long while. Finally, I looked out the living room window to see Tony getting out of a car, driven by a woman. I couldn't see her well, but when Tony came in the house, I yelled at him. "I suppose that was Bobby. Where were you, at a motel?" Tony glared at me. "Stacy, you don't even want to understand, do you?" "Understand? Oh, I think I understand very well. Why didn't you invite her in, Tony, or were you too ashamed to introduce me to your little whore?" Tony looked at me for the longest time, not saying anything, just staring at me. Then Stacy, that was Bobby. Then Stacy, that was Bobby, and next time I will invite her in. I just hope you'll have the decency and self-respect to be polite to her. I didn't know what to say to that, so I muttered something like, "Yeah, right, I'm sure your kids would like to meet her too." I thought I heard Tony murmur, "Yes, I'll bet they would." For the next 2 days, Tony and I went about our daily routines in silence. It was worse than ever, and I almost wished he'd go and stay with Bill. Saturday came, and Tony played with the kids in the morning and then left for his noon meeting. I figured they'd go to Pegasus afterward, and so I called a local teenager and arranged for her to babysit for me for a few hours. I parked near Pegasus to wait, and before long I saw two cars pull up out front. Bill drove one, and I didn't know the other driver, but I saw Tony in the front seat of the car. I got out of my car just in time to see Tony turning to help a woman from the back seat. "Bobby," I thought. In a blind rage, I walked toward them, calling out, "Tony, wait a minute." Tony turned toward me as well as the others. I saw Tony say something to them as I approached. Suddenly, I was nervous. As I reached them, Bill and two other people joined them. "Well, hi, Stacy," Bill said. "Is anything wrong?" I wanted to say that everything was wrong, but just then I noticed the woman with Tony. She was short and smiling, and she must have been at least 60 years old. Tony said, "Stacy, this is my friend, Gabe, and my buddy, Bobby. This is my wife, Stacy." Bobby came forward and took my hand. "I'm so happy to finally meet you, Stacy. Tony talks about you and the children so much that I already feel like I know you." It's hard to describe my feelings. I told Tony nothing was wrong and that I was just in the area. They asked me to join them for coffee, and I did. They didn't talk about their meeting that afternoon, but rather about work, movies, and baseball, and I could feel a closeness between them that I envied a bit. Gabe told me that he and his wife were expecting and their first baby soon. He added, "I've been sober for 2 years now, and it seems like a really special happening." That night, Tony and I were quiet with each other, and then I said, "I think I should know more about your meetings, Tony." He explained to me then that I couldn't go to closed meetings because I was not an alcoholic, but he also told me that there was a group called Al-Anon for families and friends of alcoholics, and that I could go to open speaker meetings with him as well. He also said that he'd like it if I did, but had been afraid to bring it up as he felt I hated the time he spent away from us at the meetings. Nothing gets perfect all at once. I learned that at the meetings I go to. I have read lots about alcoholism now, and I know there is a process called recovery. I've also learned a whole lot more about myself and my need to fix things and keep everything under control. Tony and I haven't gone back to being the love-struck twosome we were when we first met. Rather, we're growing to know each other better and getting closer in a different way. Tony still goes to meetings, and I encourage them now. Maybe this sounds to you like the romance is gone. For a while, I wondered about that myself, honestly. But now when the kids are in bed or visiting their Aunt Bobby, I still see the look in Tony's eyes that was there the first time I saw him. He isn't holding a beer can now, but the longer he keeps that look, he sure is holding me, and I am loving every passion-filled moment of it. Alcohol may have put a big damper on the fire in our marriage, but it sure didn't put it out for good. Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this romance program. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Else for Sunsounds. Have a wonderful week. Take care, and I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.